You are listening to the Plastic Surgery Revolution with Dr. Stephen Davis, the one and only podcast that discusses modern plastic surgery and leaves you looking great and feeling better.
Welcome, everyone, to the Plastic Surgery Revolution. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Davis. And today, we happen to have a really phenomenal guest. The most important thing is that she's a really good friend of mine. But we have Connie Brennan here. And Connie Brennan is a nurse, but not just your regular nurse, even in the plastic surgery world. Connie's a certified aesthetic nurse specialist. And she's also the national director of aesthetic medical education for Lifetime Fitness. And it's the Lifetime Spa MediSpa Corporation. She's the president and founder of the Aesthetic Enhancement Solutions, and she has worked in the plastic surgery industry, which I can't even believe myself, for over 30 years. And she's worked with plastic surgeons at every kind of a level, from assisting in procedures and in their offices. And then she's taken it to a whole nother level. And you know, with everything that's going on with COVID-19 and everyone being so unsure about what this whole plastic surgery aesthetic marketplace is really going to look like, I was really thinking who would be the best guest to have on my podcast, and it really turns out to be Connie. There's one more thing I want to say about her before I introduce her and we start talking. But what's so apropos to this time period is that her philosophy has always been safety, quality, and satisfaction for both the provider and the patient. And I think there's no more opportune time to talk about those exact philosophical thoughts then right now. Hi, Connie. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm really excited to talk with you today.
Oh, I'm so happy that you were able to join me. How are you doing, by the way? Everything good? You're healthy and safe with the family and everything?
Everyone here in Minnesota is that I know of is safe. I haven't run into anybody with COVID, and I am thrilled to say that. How about there? How are you doing with your family?
You know, so we have some friends of ours that have had some problems, but other than that, family and everything is okay. And I just know everyone, you know, I have a lot of people that listen to the podcast from all over. And I think different parts of the country are experiencing this in different waves. But one of the things I really wanted to get into with you is with you being the medical director of a fitness center, and not only there, because for everyone to know, Connie has licenses in 10 different states in the United States. So along with like teaching and setting up programs for the lifestyle, Lifetime Fitness places, Connie and I go around training doctors and nurses in how to do injectables safely. And what I want to throw out as the first thing to talk about is, what are some of the things that you're seeing about instituting when we really are allowed to get back and set up?
You know, I think that's a question that has gone around the world. I actually was listening to a webinar just this morning from physicians around the world. And just to clarify, Steve, with Lifetime, I'm actually not the medical director, but I am the education director. And we do have a plastic surgeon, Dr. Dick Tholen, who's our medical director. So we collaborate quite a bit over these kinds of things that we're talking about. But we do have one of our MediSpas, we have a PA that is actually doing hormone therapy. And during this time, you cannot let patients not have their hormones, because otherwise we could have some suicidal ideation, you know, changes in mental health, etc. So we have a PA that currently is seeing patients. And what we have done so far as implementing, and we will probably maintain this implementation when we return to the office, is we have our patients booked further apart. And we allow 15 minutes between each patient. We have only one patient in the clinic at a time, and that patient is brought through right now. This particular lifetime has a door that enters the clinic directly. And when they enter the clinic directly, not the club, they're escorted into a room for a hand washing, a temperature check. Once they wash their hands, we put gloves on them. They put a mask on. They then sign a consent, and the consent basically states that, you know, we are in a time that COVID is possible, and we don't have, it basically just confirms that they are not experiencing any symptoms of fever, shortness of breath, cough, cold symptoms, and that they have not traveled in the past 2 weeks, and that they also are acknowledging that they're sanitizing their hands, wearing gloves and their mask for their service. So we have that implemented. Once they've done their PPE, they're escorted then into the room by the same person and delivered to the provider. The provider then basically has a mask and gloves on when that patient enters the room. Their service is done for them right now. And of course, you can't really do filler on a patient with masks on. So this will have to be something to address down the road with filler. But their hormone replacement is done. And then they're directly escorted to the desk to pay. Everything is sanitized. Even their credit card is sanitized before they slide it in. And then it's sanitized again once they leave that desk and they're escorted out. The patients are instructed to wait in their car, and they will be texted when they're allowed to come in. And when that patient enters, the other patient has exited a good 15 minutes prior to them. And then everything is sanitized in between patients. So right now, that's how we're currently running it. And I know it's not the most efficient way of running patients, but currently that's how we're running the hormone practice. Now, when we have injectable patients, you know, we're thinking about our lobby and even the fabric that's on the chairs. Do we switch our chairs to something that can be washed more? Our chairs will position further apart. Maybe there will be tape on the floor where a patient can't come any closer to the desk. We're thinking about different things to make sure that, of course, patient safety is at a premium, and of our providers, their safety as well, as being thought of.
Yeah, so everything that sounds like can be done right now is being done from that regard. One of the things, and you brought this up, one of the things that I'm doing in my office right now is that I'm really making sure that the way the patients are coming in is going to be changed up. So we're actually doing internal reorganization and actually doing things to renovate and remodel a little bit of where that waiting area used to be. I don't think we're really going to have a waiting room per se anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be new. I think other things that I want to throw this out there is just some questions that I don't think we really have exact answers on or not. But are you going to feel comfortable doing filler right when, like, if we are allowed to open, let's say, next week? What would be the things that you think we would start bringing back in, especially like in your plastic surgery practices and things like that, where people are maybe having lasers, they're having injectables, not just Botox or, you know, neuromodulators, but, you know, filler material. Like, where do you think the sequence will begin? It's like starting with what and then moving to what?
I think that the toxins will probably be the first service that we can bring back. I think that, you know, safety of that, doing that with PPE on is, you know, I feel safe. I think that, you know, there are many times when you're putting toxin in the glabellar area, it will elicit the client to sneeze just because of the nerves there. And so, you know, with a mask on, should they sneeze, both people being masked should still be fairly safe if they can sneeze. You know, into their elbow with their mask on, and the provider has their mask on. But the fillers, I have a little bit of trepidation about them, just with the whole late onset nodule possibility. You know, the viral disease, even vaccinations have shown in some literature that vaccinations can bring on late onset nodules. And I actually had a client that had vaccinations and had late onset nodules a month after them. So the whole viral disease and vaccinations, I still have a little intrepidation about that. And I'm just not sure when I'm going to bring those back to the practice. I still am kind of sitting on that. How do you feel about it?
Yeah. You know, I think barring injecting anywhere close to, let's say, the oral mucosa, like around the lips or around that area, I think maybe starting to do some injectables, not only just Botox, but maybe some filler like in the cheek area or things like Sculptra that we've been doing in the décolleté, arms, even a Sculptra butt lift kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Those types of things, I'm still thinking, I guess I could be far enough away from anything that could potentially be, I guess, communicative. But I do understand what you're saying about, you know, the person's system and how they could form nodules or have some sort of reaction to almost anything. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think what we're still trying to figure out, and I've been on a few webinars about this already, is just when those tests become more available, would we start testing more and more people as we're getting more and more invasive with what the procedure would actually be? On my end, it would be maybe a breast augmentation or a tummy tuck or a facelift. Like at you know, I would almost assume that everyone's going to have a COVID test mm-hmm. before they're going to have an elective surgery. Mm-hmm. But how far from an aesthetic, you know, non-surgical procedure will we like incorporate that? That's part of that thing, like a laser. You know, like, are we going to do a resurfacing on someone's face potentially before we know about their COVID status? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Have you thought anything about some of those lasers and things that you may be doing in an office setting?
Yeah, those are challenging because with laser, you've got a patient that's in your chair for an hour and your provider is leaning right over the top of them.
Yeah.
Pardon me. And they can't have a mask on when they're doing laser. So especially if it's a full face resurfacing.
Yeah.
So those are some things that we're still, you know, we have an entire legal team that we work with Lifetime. And so we're still working on, you know, how is that going to look and when our, you know, stay at home is lifted, which in Minnesota, it's the 4th of May so far, you know,
they gave you the date.
Yeah.
Already.
Well, May 4th, they have the stay at home right now until, and then they did put not an order, but a kind of recommendation that May 13th, people will get back to the office. So we'll kind of wait to see what are, you know, how those standards and when we're lifted. But I do think that, you know, lasers, even peels, some of these peels are pretty quick, but you still have a patient whose face is completely exposed and a provider who can wear a mask when treating them, but still
right.
You have the potential exposure. I do agree with you, though, Steve. I think that if we can get some of those tests and they're not astronomically expensive, pardon me, that maybe, you know, a test prior to them entering the clinic to see, you know, having someone do the little test. And I know there's some different ones. There's some sputum tests and there's also a finger prick test. I've actually been talking with a company here in Minnesota that is right now trying to get their tests approved and their little finger stick. A little prick, and they're readable within a short amount of time. So I'm just wondering, if that would be an option to test prior to some of those, especially laser procedures when, you know, if they're negative. The only thing the tests do not prove though, is if the patient is in that 5-day period where they have the virus or they're carrying the virus,
right.
But they're not active yet. So they're still, you know, you're still at risk during that time.
That's really the issue, you know, like they didn't convert to it yet and then they have something and then that could potentially make their recovery more difficult, you know, if they did convert over. So those are some of the things. Let me change gears a little bit in a more like positive, fun thing if we can.
Sure.
So Connie, if we asked you what are some of the cool things that you know you like to talk about when you're training or when you're talking to even patients and somebody goes, well, what's something new that I could do or something that you've almost created in your practice or, you know, when you're training some of the providers that you think may be a little bit of a nuance that some of the listeners may not know about?
Oh gosh. In aesthetics, I feel like there's always new things that are really exciting. And, you know, I have a real passion for the consultation experience and just that, you know, when you meet that patient and you set their expectations and you discover what it is that they're there for and you start to establish that relationship and how important that relationship is over time. And I don't know about you, but during this time when you can't get with your patients and be with them, how important they are to you as a provider, and they become part of your family to a certain degree.
That's true.
And so I stress when I teach providers and even ones that have been in this a long time, we all get this, that, you know, it's not a one night stand, it's a relationship. So even that first consultation, just having that relationship started, that every single time you see a patient, it is a consultation. You know, we're meeting different needs sometimes when they're there in the chair, and it may not be necessarily that, you know, their line in their forehead that they're there for their Botox, but maybe it's meeting a need for them of just talking to somebody that isn't in their life and not a significant segue in their life or where they feel safe and the trust. So I think building trust and having that consultation experience every so many months, and you've been doing this. How many years have you been doing this, Steve? Have you been in it for 25 years?
Yeah, I'm going on like 28. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A long time too. I know we, whenever we see each other at meetings or at conferences or when we're going to train, we seem to like go off and start talking because we think so much alike with things. So I know I have that same feeling about making the patients feel like they're part of the family. But one of the things, that's why I want to get into though. So I'm going to ask you, so if you're doing, cause you're always so innovative, Connie, that's the other thing I love about this. So talk to me a little bit about jawline and necks. If you're seeing somebody that really wants to do something non-surgically about their jawline and their neck, what are some of your go-to things that you've been really seeing terrific results with and you think is kind of exciting?
You know, I many, many times will start a patient young with neck toxins. And I might do some micro droplet toxins in the whole platysma area. Maybe I'll just chase out a few of the necklace lines with a little toxin, Botox or Dysport or Juvo, whichever toxin the clinic prefers. And we have, you know, four different toxins. So it's a really beautiful thing. Recently, I actually put toxin in a 21-year-old neck. And the kind, I call them the tech neck lines that these young kids have gotten from bending their necks down and getting these lines, these horizontal lines, which I didn't really notice as much on younger patients years and years ago. So I many times will start with a little toxin and take a picture because it's hard for the patient to sometimes see the change until they see their before picture. And I try to take the picture, one picture on their phone. So when they leave, they have something to reference point to. And that that avoids a phone call. Like, oh, I don't think this did any, I don't think it made a change. And when they look at their picture 2 weeks later at the home, they're like, wow, that does look better. So they like that. So many times the toxin, sometimes even with these younger necks in the 30s, I might start with some Sculptra hyper diluted and do little droplets in the necklace lines. The platysma bands I'll hit with toxin routinely. Right. And then sometimes I'll take a cannula and, you know, go underneath and release the anatomy, the skin from the muscle where those necklace lines or the skin texture is not really as nice. And I'll put a little bit of, you know, hyper diluted HA filler in there as well with a toxin in combination. And so that'll, you know, release the neck muscle activity as well as put a little kind of, I call it a glide plane between the skin and the muscle and fill in some of that kind of crepiness and deeper lines. So I'll use that if I need to. And then many times I think a patient needs all of the above, including lasers. And so I'll encourage them to use their skincare all the way down to their, I tell them that the new face is the forehead to their nipples. Like the skincare should incorporate all of that. And then we'll do some lasers to kind of help the texture. And, you know, if they're going to do some peels, I just say, you know, don't stop at the jawline. go all the way down to the neck. So I do a lot of that. And then of course the jawline is really kind of a hot topic.
Right.
How do you treat the neck, Steve? Do you have some kind of tricks to the trade that you could share?
You know, it's similarly, like you're saying, I think using some sort of a neuromodulator in the neck, like a Botox or a Dysport or a Jeuveau, I think is great. And I think once patients see what that does to make the skin even in that area look more like it does in the periorbital area. So like when you do someone's, I know one of the things for me, Connie, is when someone's really just trying to get started with this whole injectable type of process, one of the areas I love to do it for them is right at that crow's feet area, because it really doesn't do much to the brows. It doesn't do much to the rest of the face, but by doing those small little droplets in that area, that's a great tester for them to understand the way the skin is going to start to feel after a neuromodulator like a Botox, and how that's just going to make everything look so shiny and tight. And I think it does the exact same thing, like you were talking about micro droplets. Doing micro droplets along the neck, even if they don't have big bands or anything like that, just makes the neck look so much more youthful. And I think going along those necklines, I think I love that idea with very diluted either Sculptra or something like a Juvederm. But one of the areas that I've really started to do more and more with is trying to build up the angle of the mandible into the chin. And I think, you know, when people start to notice a little bit of jowling along that jawline, sometimes to pull that jawline clean, like you would expect from a facelift, which again is kind of like a gold standard, but not everybody, especially moving forward with this whole COVID-19 thing, I'm not so sure if everybody's going to want to jump right on and do a facelift. But one of the things, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but sometimes it's actually easier to try to camouflage the jowl as opposed to trying to pull it really tight. So injecting something like in front of that jowl and maybe behind that jowl to kind of almost blend it into your new chin or jawline seems to kind of take your eye away from the fact that you may have a little bit of a jowl or a descent below that jawline where you would like it to be so nice and sharp and clean. What do you think about that?
I 100% agree with you. I think, you know, adding to the angle of the jaw can really even maybe the illusion, of course, is that a stronger jawline is a little more youthful jawline. And so I do agree with you that adding to the jawline, it's amazing how much product you need when you're really, you know, building the jawline. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, you when you're thinking about syringes and you're thinking about one or two, it just doesn't cut it with a jawline. So that 3, 4, 5, and 6 sometimes can be a little surprising to that patient. But when you're thinking about, you know, the amount of syringes you need, and 5 syringes equals a teaspoon, and a teaspoon of caulking only builds so much, you know, space. Yeah. So it really, you know, you need a lot for that jawline. But I do agree that when you do build the jawline up, it does give a nice shadow effect, because the light can hit and the shadow effect underneath it can create a more beautiful jawline. And the jowl does look so much better if you can just kind of enhance that jawline a little bit, both pre-jowl sulcus and post-jowl.
I agree. And I think one of the things that you and I always love to talk about when we're at these meetings and things like that is, you know, stepwise approaches for a lot of these patients is the beauty of the ability to do all these injectables and all these non-invasive procedures so that they can always be the captain of the ship. And I think a lot of times what gets missed in patients' understanding about fillers and injectables and lasers is that you don't have to do it all at one sitting. You can actually live with the results from what you achieved at that one visit, and then always build from there. And I think that's where your treatment plans and my treatment plans, like we always talk about, seem so aligned, is because someone that comes in that really is complaining about their jowl, or that they have like their jawline and their neck seem like they're almost blending together. Mm-hmm. Well, once you hear that that's what they're really focused on, there are so many options nowadays to try to address that in a non-surgical way. We can remove fat with deoxycholic acid, this Kybella, and then try to remove some of those areas that may seem a little fatty. And at the same time, add a little bit of Botox around the jawline so that their neck just seems and their jawline just seems to be tighter. So it is interesting to be able to play with some of these new tools that we've all started learning how to use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're so grateful. And there's more to come. You know, when you think about, jawline filler, there's another one that will come to market maybe in a year or so. And I think the most important thing for patients to realize with, especially some of these fillers now that are lasting longer, is that these are, implant type materials. They will be with us for a long time. So the importance of the patient health and us doing our due diligence to make sure they're delivered appropriately, and going to someone like yourself who has done this for a long time and has a lot of experience for their best outcome. Because some of these fillers are fantastic, but they're lasting a long time, which is wonderful for the patient, but also can lead to problems if not done well.
Right. I'm so happy that you said that, because I think that's probably a great place to end our podcast. I think, Connie, I want to thank you so, so much for joining me today. And as you can hear, everybody, at her heart and in her philosophy about safety, that's even the way she's ending this entire podcast, is talking about safety again. And moving forward, I'm telling everyone that's listening, that's going to be the theme of anybody going to try to enhance their appearance or enhance their feeling about themselves. You're going to have to place safety in front of everything else. And I know you may have been thinking about that before COVID-19, but now, where are you going to get your injections done? Who's doing it? Is it in a safe environment? Is it going to be something that, is reproducible and that you could trust? And I'm telling you, I think moving forward, that's where this whole industry, Connie, I don't know if you both, are in the same mindset, but I think you probably are. That's what's going to turn out to be how we can almost resurrect this whole industry again into saying you can really look great, you can have it done in a safe way, but everyone's got to take responsibility now also about seeking out the right individuals to do your injections and your procedures. Mm-hmm. And Connie, thank you so, so much for being on our podcast. Any final words?
Oh, thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure always to have conversations with you. I think we could have a podcast for a half of a day. There's so much to talk about.
I think so too.
So I appreciate you are inviting me, and I do stress the importance of safety for our patients, for ourselves as their providers. And we can do this. We can get back. It's just going to take some innovation, and we all have to figure out exactly how to keep everybody as safe as we can. And we'll do it. We have a very innovative aesthetic community. And you, Steve, I look up to you, and I love listening to your talks. And thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Thank you, Connie. And we're going to do this again maybe in about a month or so, and we'll see where we're all at that point. But thank you, everyone, for listening. You've been listening to the Plastic Surgery Revolution. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Davis, and we'll be talking again next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Plastic Surgery Revolution with Dr. Stephen Davis. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or whatever app you use to listen to podcasts. Keep listening, looking great, and feeling better.